The following is brought to you in association with and from a proud partner of the Shining Wizards Network. Entertainment here.
You're listening to Pure Rock Radio. Feed your addiction. Yeah!
This episode is brought to you by the Bleeding Old Blood Club with this important message. The Bleeding Old Blood Club believes life doesn't end at 40. Live life. Take that trip. Learn that skill. Get in the pit. Learn to skate or get back on your skateboard. Shred it up once again. Check us out on Facebook, the Bleeding Old Blood Club. You can teach an old dog new tricks.
Welcome to Radioactive Metal. This is Radioactive Metal, your source for news, views, tunes, and interviews. Here are your hosts, Snowy, Rock, Corrine, and Aaron.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to a special A Show of Fans episode of Radioactive Metal. This is episode 590, and I'm Snowy White.
And this is Aaron, and dear listeners, this episode is brought to you tonight by True Cult Coffee, TrveKVLTCoffee.com, the only coffee for real metalheads. I know there's other options out there, and I know there's even options out there that look pretty cool because they have a skull and crossbones, but is that skull and crossbones coffee made for you by a metalhead for you metalheads? I doubt it. So check them out on Twitter. Check them out on Instagram at trve.tv. No, crap. At trve.kvlt.coffee for those places to interact. And of course, subscribe, because when you subscribe, not only will you never run out of coffee, you will also get a kick-ass band or two, sometimes even physical merchandise that you will be surprised with every month. And it's a great time. So trvekvltcoffee.com bring you this episode tonight. Snowman, what's going on?
Well, I have to say I'm pretty excited. No, I'm not drinking True Cult coffee right now. I am in tonight. I will be imbibing with the Lemmies because I'm kind of celebrating. Unfortunately, it is a bittersweet celebration. Tonight, we are going to, like our longtime listeners will know, one of the things that we like to do on occasion is have our own band spotlight episode where we take the time out to focus exclusively on a certain band. And unfortunately, as we found out last week, we lost one of the all-time greats in one Rush drummer, Neil Peart. Okay, so with that in mind, unfortunately, we could not, like, when it was announced that the man had passed away and the world was mourning, we were just about to press play to record our Rammy Awards. So we couldn't exactly reschedule, we couldn't reshuffle and all that, so we waited until this week to focus on the mighty Rush in this special Spot Band Spotlight episode. Okay, and with that, I'm kind of glad things kind of fell the way they had, because it gave me the opportunity to get an old friend on the horn to join us for this particular episode in sharing the life and times of Neil Peart and the Mighty Rush. Aaron.
Yeah.
I want to introduce to you and all of the beautiful motherfuckers listening to this to a man here. He and I, we go back till we were 8 years old, I want to say. Aaron, this is my good old buddy, Mr. Mark Buell. Mark Buell, this is Aaron.
Welcome to the show, Mark.
Thanks, Aaron. Good to meet you.
Good to meet you too, man.
We've known each other 40 years. It's incredible.
It has been 40 years,
it
yes.
It was 40 years ago today that Sgt. Pepper told the band to play it. Please tell me you guys get the Beatles reference. Come on now.
Sgt. Pepper, but after that, I'm not sure. Yes. Mark and I, yeah, we just said, okay, we go back 40 years in 1979. How we had met is our fathers were in the military together. We ended up on one of the Canadian Force bases, CFB Shiloh, just outside of Brandon here in Manitoba. That was 1979 when we moved there. We became friends right away. Lived together for about 4 years. I moved out to Victoria. Mark moved to Winnipeg here. And then a couple of years after my stint in Victoria, we moved here. And then, as it turned out, into the same neighborhood. I imagine like our fathers had something to do with that, with the whole house hunting thing and all that. So basically, Mr. Buell and I grew up together. So this is kind of one of those situations where we have a guest on where I can't bullshit about nothing. Okay, because if there's one person that knows me, probably, you know, maybe in some ways even more than Mrs. Snowy, and that's Mark. So, this is kind of one of those situations where it's like, oh, okay, but I'm so excited. I'm it's beyond words having you on, man, because I remembered growing up, okay, Rush with you and your two older brothers as well. Rush was a religion to you guys, as I recall. Yes.
That I think could be an understatement.
it was. And so when I did, you know, when word came across my desk that Neil Peart or Pert, you know what, we'll get into that a little later. When that came across my desk that he passed away, it was actually from Mark. It was Mark's posting that told me about that. And after I picked myself off the floor over the death announcement, it hit me. It's like, oh my God, I heard about this from Mark. I could not think of a more appropriate person to hear this from and all that. And so with that, I could not think of a more appropriate person to sit down and discuss all things Rush, my friend. So thank you so much for giving us a moment of your time and discussing things with us, because I know you are a busy guy, because you kind of like you were a guest that we've kind of been meaning to have on before because for what you do for a living is what I call a highfalutin internet job. Okay. And I figured with what you do in some way, shape, or form, you know, with the way the internet has shaped the music industry, I thought with what you do, at some point you would make a rather interesting guest. That was the original plan, to have you on the show. Now something is a little bit different, but I'm still kind of curious as to exactly what it is you do with this highfalutin internet job.
Highfalutin may be a bit of a stretch, but okay. Yeah, so I mean, I shouldn't say it. I love my job, and I love what I do. I work for a global not-for-profit that does a few things, but the two most important, I think, are we help communities that currently don't have internet access get internet access.
Oh, and in my on. Job, that's awesome. Yeah.
And in my job, I'm the vice president for North America. And so a lot of our work is in very remote communities in the Arctic, or a lot of indigenous communities in the U.S. The other thing we do is we try and secure the internet. So we develop standards that make it more secure moving forward, so that, you know, the internet's a safe and trusted place for people to do business.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah, that is really cool. And I got 800 million questions about the internet and all that, and I want to throw them all at you now, but I'm going to save that because I still want to have you on to have the original internet type program with you. So hopefully we won't scare you off too much tonight, and you will want to join us again. And all that for that very reason. But for today, yeah, it's so good to talk to you. It's just, it's too bad the reason we are doing this was just, like I immediately thought of you. I imagine when you got the news, you must have just been crushed.
Yeah, I actually heard from one of my kids. He had texted me. He had picked it up. I'm not sure how. And I didn't believe it. When I read the text, I was you know, complete disbelief. And so I did the quick search online and found it out it was true. And I'll tell you, I was absolutely gutted. This is really the end of an era for me. You know, this Rush is more than a band to me. It's more than music. It's been really a way of life for, 35, almost 40 years. So it's a life-changing experience for me, I think.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You had the opportunity as well recently to meet Mr. Geddy Lee as well. What's the situation with that?
So Geddy Lee last year released a book called The Big Beautiful Book of Bass. The thing is massive, and it weighs an absolute ton. But so he went on a book tour and came to Ottawa. So I took my son, who was 13 at the time, to meet Geddy Lee. He's become a really big Rush fan.
And no doubt.
I'll tell you, it was a great experience. He was such a great guy. You know, it's a fairly typical, you know, contrived fan setup kind of neat thing. You wait in line for an hour and you get your 2 minutes with Geddy and you move on. And he just kept talking to us. He spent at least 5 minutes with us talking to my son, who's 14, and joking around with him. He was actually making fun of my son for playing guitar, telling him guitar's easy. It's bass that's hard, and he should really.
That's awesome.
Right on. So Aaron, this is probably, because Aaron plays the bass, this is probably a book that you should look into as well.
Yeah, it probably is. Like, I've heard great things about it. It's hit like all the different media, you know, that a bass player might troll. But as we will get into here, I am really not a Rush fan. And I know this is going to be really interesting because I'm a bass player and I'm not a Rush fan. Like right there, that has heads exploding. Because, you know, like genetically, I think I'm supposed to be is what I've been told, you know. Uh-huh. But yeah, we'll get into that. But I mean, like as far as for Geddy Lee, I actually was a big fan of his solo album with and I can't remember if this is the name of it or if this is the track that I liked, but it was My Favorite Headache. I think that was the track. I absolutely
I think that was the album and the track.
Yeah, absolutely love that one. But yeah, we'll kind of get into that because I definitely I have questions about the book. I'd like to hear a little bit about it, because I mean that I have nothing but good things to say about everybody in the band. I've just never been a huge fan, but we'll get into that.
Yeah, we're definitely going to be. We're going to cover everything, you know, rather extensively. Our longtime listeners will kind of know the gist about these special episodes. But if you're just kind of tuning in for the first time, we're going to be focusing on like some of the key areas that are kind of most important to fans of the band, including, you know, our favorite song. We've seen them live, when we discovered them, and always with this episode, this special episode, I should say, the category that I always enjoyed the most is what we call the band moment. Something, some way, shape, or form that happened in your life that is somehow connected to the band. And all that. So, that's always kind of my thing. I guess probably the most appropriate thing we should start, Mr. Buell, is how old were you? What record, etc. How did you first discover Rush?
Well, I think it was similar to how so many other people discover bands. It was my two older brothers came home with moving pictures in must have been 81, 82. I was 10 or 11 years old, and you know, they played that album so much, I'm sure they wore the grooves out. But it was through my brothers.
That actually makes a lot of sense. And now one of your brothers, and you have two, we're not going to use their names, but you have two older twin brothers.
Yes.
One of their offspring, Aaron, is a guitarist in a local Winnipeg metal band. Mr. Austin Buell is a part of Ebb and Flow here in Winnipeg, who I'm going to go and see them on Valentine's Day. He's playing a gig with Ducky and KK. Happens.
Valentine's Day.
Yeah. Master. It's definitely going to be a lot of fun. And I don't know if I told you this, Mark, but when I first introduced myself to Austin, I said, "Hi, I actually know your uncle. We go back to like 8 years old," and his face just lit up. "No way. Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome." It's all that. Yeah. So he was pretty stoked. And my dad, Mark, who of course you'll remember, he remembered your brothers and your dad, obviously, and all that. And he was, my dad was just not a music fan. He was actually pretty excited to see that your nephew was out and about in the scene. How did you discover Rush, Aaron?
So I was trying to figure that out because they're just a band that has just kind of always existed.
Okay.
Like it's not, there's no one moment. Cause I was really trying to think, I'm like, okay, when did I first discover Rush? And I can't remember a time not knowing about the band.
Ah, right.
You know, like I know they're really prominent towards the, you know, the late 80s, early 90s, especially, you know, being a bass player and a musician, all that sort of stuff, and going into music school at that time, like everybody's talking about. But I knew about them long before that. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why. But like the only thing I can think of, like if I had to pinpoint it, I can picture the Starman logo on various t-shirts. Uh-huh. school in at other concerts, because that's one of the coolest logos, and we'll kind of get to that later. But yeah, I really could not pin down a time. Like, I've just always seemed to have known about them. I'm like, well, that's kind of weird, you know.
Well, by the time we were of age, like, the Moving Pictures was what, record number 9, 7, 8, or 9 by then, Mark? You would have a better idea of this.
Yeah, it's about that.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, they were kind of obviously a thing, but for me, I'm gonna have to say, just shortly after Mark would have discovered them, like with the Signals album, I guess would have been 1982. I remember, and I really want to say it was probably through you, dude. Like you introducing me to Rush and all that. And I think I was actually thinking about this today. Like you and I, we probably discovered a lot of bands just together. I think we discovered like Van Halen, AC/DC, Harlequin. Like a lot of those bands like that, we kind of discovered together if memory serves me. Now, I might be wrong. I'm getting old. I hate to admit it. And all that. It's been more than a day and a night. But, you know, when I think about it, there's a lot of bands that, you know, that we discovered around, you know, the early 80s. That it's like, holy shit. You know, we were probably right beside one another.
And then I think that continued when we're 15, right? Like you were getting into a lot of metal, like Venom and Slayer, and I found out about those bands through you.
Yeah, actually, yeah. I remember one of your brother's friends got a real kick out of Hellhammer, and he used to give us such a hard time, rib us so bad about that, and eventually. As well, you and I, and a mutual friend of ours, and his name has come up on the show before, you and I and Skid kind of discovered Minor Threat, the Dead Kennedys, bands like that, together as well. So, oh, yeah, that's a lot of water under the bridge, man. So, yeah. I think, it had to have been with the Signals record. For sure. Like there's just so much. Have you ever seen them live?
Have I seen them live?
Yeah, I imagine you have.
Oh, yeah. Definitely more than once.
How many times? I'm curious.
I've seen them twice now. Okay. Well, twice, so it'll never be a third time. Right. I was always in the unfortunate position of living in places where Rush didn't play.
Oh, I feel you, brother.
after the Signals tour, they didn't play in Winnipeg again until I had long moved away.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Because with Winnipeg, and that this was the reason that I'm going to say now. I've never, one of my biggest rock and roll regrets is I've never seen Rush, never seen them live, and I'm just never going to, because as I recall, it was probably the Signals tour, well, it had to have been if that was the last time they played Winnipeg. Some, you know, rather astute gentleman, you know, thought it would be a really good idea to throw something on stage striking Getty in the head with it. And he said that we're never playing Winnipeg again. Now, that sucks for Winnipeggers, but give the man credit. He stuck to his word for decades.
Yeah.
I think they might have come back to Winnipeg. I think it was 2012. You know, and they played the one show since the Winnipeg embargo, you know, and unfortunately I just didn't make it for one reason or another, and you know Mr. Perk got sick, and you know the rest is unfortunately history. It's Peart. Right? Like, it's supposed to be Neil Peart.
Yeah, I heard Geddy Lee explain it once, and he said, you know, ear, how you pronounce ear.
Right.
Peart, like ear in the middle.
Right. Okay. Well, with myself, like, I no surprise, Mark, I still read a shit ton of music magazines. I buy Disciple, what we call it on the show. I buy it every month. Since I've started skateboarding, I buy Thrasher every month and all that. I still buy music magazines. So I read things. I read names first. And then when you hear them, you've already trained yourself. Okay, so when I first saw the name Neil Peart on the Signals album, I saw Pert. You know, it looked like Pert and all that. Much like I'm never going to call them on any regular basis. I'm never going to call them Celtic Frost. Okay, I'm doing it now for this purposes, because we've grown up, we saw Celtic, the Boston Celtics and all that. I've heard Tom G. Warrior himself live say Celtic Frost. Okay, so it's probably never going to change, though. I'm always going to say Pert. You know what? And I guess when you first saw the name, that's probably your initial, you know, your initial reaction to the pronunciation as well.
Like, Yeah.
And that's how you heard. Like, do you recall when you first heard Peart? Was it that what Geddy was saying?
Oh no, I mean, geez, I can't even put that into my memory whatsoever. You know, I mean, you remember me when I was a teenager. I had every article I saw about Rush, everything I saw about Rush, I cut out. Every video that was on, I recorded. I was just, you know, my room was overflowing with news about Rush. And so I couldn't even place it. I was consuming everything that had even a modicum of Rush to it.
No doubt. Cover songs. Now, I've seen so many bands covering Sabbath, Priest, Bathory, you know, just a metric shit ton of all these bands. Venom, Morbid Angel, like, they're just, I haven't really seen a whole hell of a lot of Rush covers. Maybe I just haven't discovered them or whatnot. I'm kind of curious, have you seen, like, know of a lot of bands covering Rush, like, over the years? Maybe bands just don't bother trying.
Yeah, I think that's probably the case, right? If you can't play it, don't even try. No, that's not true. There is actually quite a few reasonably good Rush covers out there. I mean, I'm not a big fan of covers to begin with. I always like going to the original material, but you know, everyone from Nelly Furtado to Tragically Hip and you name it covered Rush. The most interesting covers I've seen are actually from Dream Theater, who you know, are massive Rush fans.
And, oh, for sure.
And will cover Rush songs in many of their concerts.
Right on. Yeah.
Rush actually released an album of covers of music they were into.
That was one of the things that I was going to get into. In that album of cover songs, the one that really stuck out for me was their rendition of Blue Cheer's Summertime Blues. And when that, like, I just, like, I could not think of a more appropriate band, like, to do that song. Like, there is, like, no one else could possibly, like, do that song other than Rush. It just felt perfect. And then when I actually heard it, I'm like, oh my God, yeah, everything that I just, you know, marked out over, it's just like, holy shit, this is true. It's absolutely amazing. I imagine you've heard that.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. The one little known thing about Rush is before their first album, they had released a single in 73, and it was actually a cover of a Buddy Holly song called Not Fade Away.
Oh, see? I did not know that. I did not know that. Cool. Aaron, what are some of, when it comes to Rush and covers and being covered and all that, what has caught your ear?
Well, so as I was going through things, Rush's cover of Summertime Blues is something that caught my eye as well, because while everybody says, oh, it's Eddie Cochran's Summertime Blues, the Rush version sounds more like the Who's cover of Summertime Blues.
Oh, mm-hmm.
And then I found another couple, at least one more Who song, but I can't remember what it was that they did. So I'm going to guess that they're probably Who fans, which endears them to me more, because I absolutely love the Who. But as far as bands covering Rush, one of my favorite renditions of Rush is when Primus does it. So Primus used to cover, they used to work YYZ into the beginning of John the Fisherman. And you can hear this on their Suck on This record, which is a live record. And it was probably the first Primus record that was out. It was a live record. And it starts with YYZ, the dee-dee-dee-dee-dee, and then they kick in a da-da-da-da-da-da-da, right into John the Fisherman. And then I have a live bootleg recording. I want to say Primus was in Pittsburgh, and they did YYZ in its entirety.
Oh, wow.
And then when I was doing some more research, YYZ seems to be a big song to cover, but it's only going to be covered by people that are monster musicians, right? Because and that's the one thing is Rush, all three of those guys are monster musicians, just monster musicians. They have elevated the level of playing just by putting out what they put out. And so I found a cover of YYZ by James Murphy, Matt Gilroy, and Dean Castronovo.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I found a version of Limelight covered by Ninja Sex Party.
Okay. I'm looking that up tonight.
Yeah, you need to check it out. It's pretty good. Red Barchetta. I found a cover of Red Barchetta by the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra. And it's killer. It's killer. Because Red Barchetta is a song I really enjoy. I love that song. And so that was a good one. And then Tom Sawyer was another one that seemed to be covered a lot. Mindless Self-Indulgence does a cover, as well as Deadzy. And I really like the Deadzy version. It was freaking heavy.
Wow.
I'll tell you, the song I expected to find a heavy metal cover of, some sort of metal band, was Working Man, because Working Man is so freaking heavy. That's just so heavy. I can't believe there wasn't some, heck, I could hear Deicide do it,
Oh, for sure.
I was expecting some heavy band to do it.
Right. Well, I will say Allegiant, who we've had on the show, no doubt we'll have them on again. They did a absolute killer version of Subdivisions. I just heard that, and it really is testament to exactly how the influence that Rush has had. If everything from the Philharmonic Orchestra to a tech death band like Allegiant, if all of these bands are covering Rush, and even three guys, the three of us, we have so much in common, we're still actually pretty different people in our own way. And if we're finding this connection with that, it just goes to show. One of the things that came out right away, right after they announced the death, his death was... Lawrence Gowan was doing a live show. It might have been a Styx concert. Or, it had to have been because there was a lot of people there. I don't think Gowan as a solo artist, you know, is very much of a draw. But Styx, when it was announced, and he just did a wicked piano version of Limelight just by himself and all that. And that was very touching. Like, I got chills, you know. This one man just killing it, just killing it like that. That was absolutely amazing. Do you have any more off the top of your head that you could think of, Mark? That just like, well, some of the cover songs.
Since you mentioned the Gowan cover at the concert, I think it was the same night. Tool did the same thing.
Yeah,
you can find it on YouTube, and it's quite amazing.
Which song? Same song or different song?
I'd have to remember.
That's the thing about episodes like this. Things kind of hit you, and it's like, oh no, I know it. It's on the tip of my brain. Give me a second. Shit. You know.
Yeah, I do remember they did a bit of A Passage to Bangkok. Off the 2112 album.
Right on. Well, everyone listening to this, like, hit the interwebs, hit YouTube, try to find some of this stuff. I have no doubt it's just going to be one interesting piece of material after another. One of the things with Rush, like, you get some bands, and like death metal bands like Cannibal Corpse and all that, they're kind of guilty of this. A lot of bands, when it comes to their album covers, kind of have a formula. We got to have this in it. Kiss, like a lot of their albums, just like was them with their mugs. Okay. Yes. Ramones as well. Like, Kiss rules. The Ramones are awesome, but come on, their album covers are boring, you know, because a lot of times it's just them.
The Ramones are more boring. I mean, at least Kiss had like the whole comic book kind of thing going on for a lot of records. The Ramones, it was literally almost the exact same cover every time.
definitely seemed that way. Like,
yeah.
With Rush though, they, out of the 19 albums or whatever, like, you wouldn't know that was the same band, but once you have it in your head that it's Rush, you could, even though they're all different, you could also go, oh yeah, I could totally see that being a Rush album cover.
Yeah, there's a theme.
And it's just, but they're all different. But you can just tell, it's just the feeling like that you get, like, this is definitely a Rush album. What, Mark, what album cover kind of sticks out for you, or does one? For you, you know.
Well, it's interesting. You talk about the themes of the albums, because most Rush covers were created by the same guy. They had an art director named Hugh Syme, who did, I think, every album since Caress of Steel. You know, the theme sort of stands to reason there. My favorite cover, that's a tough question, but you know. The one I really do love though is 2112. You know, in its simplicity with the red star on the cover, it's there's so much meaning to such a simple image that you know, that one really sticks out for me.
Yeah. It stands for the band. It's like the Dead Kennedys DK thing. Like, it means Rush. It means Rush. What about you, Aaron? What, any of the album covers that kind of stick out for you?
Well, so 2112 and the Starman logo is really what sticks out for me. But because of that, probably the Spirit of Radio is one of my favorites, the Greatest Hits album. Just because, like, I love the old-timey, like, wooden radio with the Starman logo on it. Like, I just absolutely love the aesthetic of that.
Yeah, that's a great album cover.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's kind of making a statement there.
Yeah.
Excuse me. I always thought, like, the Roll the Bones record, like, album cover.
Oh, okay? That is a good one.
With the kid, like, kicking the skull.
The skull, yeah.
That's so twisted, but it works so well, okay? Because it's like, that's what every kid does. I remember as a kid, like, we all did it. We walked down the street, we kicked a rock, you know, half a mile or whatever. Like, well, this is something we all did. Okay, now, to take that picture of innocence and change it to, like, a skull, like, that's fucked up, man, but in a totally good artistic way, you know, that, and it's just like that only sticks out for me in terms of a Rush album, but just album covers in general. Like, if I was going to make a list, and hey, this is a topic sometime down the line, Aaron, like the 10 best album covers of all time, like that for me, that's got to be in the equation. It's got to be at least in the conversation.
It really, that one, you know, I can't believe that I missed that cover, because that really is a fantastic one. I always liked it, but it's just that Starman logo. Like, I feel like I just saw it used so often. I just love the Starman logo. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Well, definitely. You know, I'd say it's not even really a logo of Rush. It's emblematic of who they are. You know, the deeper meaning of a guy who has nothing standing in front of, you know, the image of an oppressive government. You know, the idea of no matter what you have, you can fight, you know, the powers that be. It's absolutely incredible.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And, you know, like it's that type of creativity that we could always expect from Rush. I mean, it might not be, you know, as straightforward as Fight the Power or, you know, whatever some punk rocker might spew out, but like this spirit for something like that. Definitely. We're getting down. And I said this last week with our Rammy categories, but we're kind of getting down to the nitty gritty here, guys. These are kind of the big ones. If you absolutely had to pick a favorite Rush song, and I know this is probably going to be the hardest for you, Mark. So we're going to put you, you know, we're going to put the beams of light down on you now. We're going to put you on the spotlight. We're going to make you sweat here, dude. Give us, you know, your favorite Rush song, the best Rush song. It must be so hard for you.
Yeah. Oh man, this is torture. you know, I really have this love for Rush songs that are about a place, and you know, they've written a lot of songs about specific places. And I find when they do that, they really capture the energy of you know, the city or whatever else. Like, you know, YYZ is about Toronto, and it feels like Toronto when you're there, right? But for me, my favorite Rush song, it's a bit of an odd one, and it's one they don't play live very much, is called the Camera Eye, and it's from it's off Moving Pictures. About New York and London. I remember the first time I ever went to New York City, you know, I'm headed to a meeting in the morning. There's millions of people out, and the song just jumped into my head, right? I just got caught up in it.
Right on. And yeah, the words, the camera eye, also, you know, appear in one of their more famous songs as well, as I recall. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I've had one too many one too Lemmys here. But didn't this the words "the camera eye" appear in Tom Sawyer at some point?
Limelight.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Same album.
Ballpark. I was in the ballpark. Yeah. It did. Yeah. For sure. What about you, dude? Like, what's you got? You got a Rush song that kind of sticks out?
Yeah, I had a few that that kind of came to mind, but one of my favorites has always been The Trees. I love that song. I love the music of it. Just the lyrics. There's unrest in the forest. There's trouble in the trees. I love that song.
And one of the best acoustic guitar intros of a song ever.
Yes. Yeah. It's beautiful. Yeah.
Right on. And yeah, once again, there's that what he's trying to convey there. For sure. I don't know, man. Like I discovered Rush with the Signals album. Like New World Man was the first single and the biggest single off that record. That is the song that just always sticks with me. Like I sing a lot when I'm at work, okay, and it annoys the hell out of everyone around me, you know, because I can't sing for shit. Okay, that's why I do it. I'm the type of guy, yeah, I can't sing, but I'm going to do it, you know. And you know how some people, they sing in the shower when no one's around, but with the second someone can hear them, they kind of clam up because they suck so bad? I'm the other way. Don't let me know that I have an audience, okay? Like, I'll be at work and I'm singing. And it's one of my coworkers. Shut up! You suck. Oh, don't go there, buddy.
Dude, I am so with you, and I tell people all the time I can't sing, but I don't let that stop me.
That's right. When you have an audience, you sing louder. When I am singing a Rush song, more often than not, it is New World Man. Right. Yeah. That's and if I was to make a list of like my 20 favorite. Songs of all time. I have a definite honorable mention here. It's not really a Rush song, but Geddy Lee's appearance on Bob and Doug McKenzie's Take Off.
Right. Of course. Yeah.
Okay. Aaron, would you know who the McKenzie brothers are?
Well, I know the McKenzie brothers because of the Golden Toque. Okay. But other than that, like that's pretty much where my knowledge ends.
Okay, well, before there was a Bill and Ted, before there was a Wayne and Garth, before there was all of that silliness, there was Bob and Doug McKenzie. Take Off, you hosers up here. It was a little sketch on the old SCTV program up here, which was basically, would you say, Mark, SCTV is kind of like Canada's Saturday Night Live, kind of a different idea.
Yeah, I think
so. It was still sketch comedy back then, and Bob and Doug McKenzie were definitely the favorites on SCTV. It was Dave Thomas and Rick Moranis. They were Bob and Doug McKenzie. They coined the phrase hoser, take off, all of that good stuff. To this day, every Christmas morning, it's tradition in Snowy Manor to play Bob and Doug's 12 Days of Christmas and all that. It's just part of this, and it has been for years. And now when Geddy Lee appeared on the first single from the Great White North album, Bob and Doug McKenzie's only album, when he appeared on the first single, Take Off, Okay, like that was genius. I remember, Mark, you and I listening, to not only the Great White North album, but that song in particular. And we were both, because fans of both Rush and SCTV, I remember like you and I just, this is so awesome. In that cool 10-year-old voice.
Yeah, killing ourselves laughing. Man, I'm sure if you get cut, you bleed maple syrup, I gotta say.
Don't say maple syrup in front of Aaron, please.
Oh, man, okay.
because Aaron and I, we love to chuck shit at each other. He likes to say here in Canada, we do nothing but play hockey and eat maple syrup.
Yeah, and wear flannel. That's important too.
Wear flannel, and I bug him for being a Trump loving American and all that. Even though like no one that I know really likes Trump, but I still got to chuck shit at him. And I give him a hard time, you know, being a lazy, you know, soft American and all that. And up here, we live in igloos. You know, but hey, yeah,
it's 18 degrees Celsius here today. It's pretty rough.
It's been minus 40 here in Winnipeg the last couple days.
Do I have to disclose that I'm wearing flannel now?
I mean, it's okay because actually I am too. So.
Right on. Yeah. So, Aaron, when you get a chance, like Bob and Doug McKenzie, the Great White North album, and just the song Take Off with Geddy Lee, it's Canadiana. I don't know if that's an actual thing.
It is now.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. It's not like I haven't coined my own phrases over the last decade.
All the time.
You know, so yeah, definitely Canadiana at its finest. Same thing, Mark. Gonna put you on, you know, we're gonna rake you over the coals again. Give us a favorite Rush album.
Another killer one. And you know, you gave me a heads up you were gonna ask this question, so you know, I did a lot of soul searching over the last 24 hours, and it's tough. But I kind of have to say, you know, I'm really into that sort of period from 2112 up to Moving Pictures. And I really have a thing for, like, A Farewell to Kings. I think that's a brilliant album.
Would you say, you know, Rush has kind of had eras? Okay, because, like, it's just to me... Like when the 80s kicked in, okay, like, well, maybe like after the Grace Under Pressure record, when the 80s like really kicked in, do you feel maybe they might have changed their sound a little bit to kind of sound more 80s and all that with albums like Moving Pictures and not Moving Pictures, Power Windows, Presto? Albums like that definitely had more of an 80s feel to them. Would you say like that's accurate?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you know, they really kind of shifted towards shorter songs. You know, they weren't doing the 20-minute epics anymore. They became a lot more radio friendly. I did for a period of time lose interest in their current stuff through the 80s. In hindsight though, I've started listening to it again, and you know, I see what they're trying to do, and they were doing some interesting things, but at the time, I didn't really like that shift, and was really happy when, in the 90s, they kind of went back to that heavier kind of power trio sound.
Right. Yeah, because I noticed that as well, and it wasn't just Rush, it was just, it was a lot of bands, like Heart. Okay, like when you saw the Wilson sisters, like all done up, all glam and all that, like a little part of me died. Like when I saw that, you know, when you saw the Scorpions, Ozzy Osbourne with their hair teased up, wearing pink leather and all that. And you're like, man, like they're trying to really 80s their shit up here, man. You know, and I kind of got that with Rush as well. And I have to admit, I kind of went, with them as well, but once Roll the Bones came along and you can kind of feel like the shift back to Rush saying, you know what, like fuck the 80s, man, like
the 80s was an awkward time for a lot of us, I guess. I don't know.
At least those bands that kind of, you know, were doing their thing, and you know, and then they felt like the pressure to kind of conform, with the times and all that. And then there was just sometimes like a guy like me, like just went ballistic on the 80s as well. Okay, and then I think back, like some of the shit that I just fucking hated. Like in the 80s, you know, like that punk rock stick in my ass kind of got loosened over the years and all that. And then I go back and it's like, you know, actually, Great White isn't actually that bad. And we've had Jack Russell on the show. So, yeah. And no matter what era, like, any member of Rush would have been welcome on this show. And we would have talked about picking raspberries if they wanted to. Like, okay, you know, whatever you want to talk about, sure. You know, if you want to ask the questions, you know, I'll do that. Yes, Mr. Lee. Yes, Mr. Lifeson. Yeah. And like I said at the top of the show, we're still talking about the albums here. What the hell am I talking about? Because I haven't chimed in with Signals. That is still kind of my go-to record. And with that, okay, when you meet that love of your life, okay, and, you know, you get together and all that, inevitably, when you've been together long enough, your record collections just kind of merge, okay? And then all of a sudden, you got a bunch of records that, you know, you don't necessarily want, but that special someone now in your life kind of have. You know, that's why I have a bunch of Samantha Fox albums in my collection now and all that, because Mrs. Snowy was really big on Samantha Fox and all that. One of the records that she did bring into our joint collection was Signals on vinyl. I thought, well, this is kind of weird. I didn't know you were a Rush fan. She said, yeah, it was an album that just kind of was probably a birthday or Christmas present or whatever. So we actually have two copies of Signals on vinyl.
That's cool.
Down in the record. Yeah. Sorry, did you guys both? Yeah, you both. Aaron, do you have a favorite Rush album? Yeah, you have a favorite Rush album
throughout all this? So, this is going to sound lame, but because I'm not the super fan, my favorite album is probably Spirit of Radio, because it's the greatest hits album.
Well, fair enough.
A close second is Roll the Bones, and we'll talk about why here when we get to the band moment.
Okay.
But yeah, like I was going through looking at everything. I'm like, okay, you know, what album? And I mean, there's a lot of stuff I like from each era, but Spirit of Radio collects all of that. You know, and so for me, that's what it is, which I know is lame, but like I said, I've never been a huge Rush fan, but the bummer about doing this and putting this together is that after I'm sitting down listening to stuff, I'm like, oh, maybe I like this stuff more than I realize, and now I'll never have the chance to see it live, you know?
Yeah, that's too bad. That's okay. You know what? You've really got me thinking, Aaron. Okay, when you said, okay, we're gonna get to the band moment and all that. Okay, you got me curious. Okay, your band moment. What's going on there?
All right, so I'm a bass player, like we've discussed, and I've had, you know, several bands over the years, and in the 90s, I was working with a drummer who, he was still kind of new and learning stuff. And I had a friend who was dating a professional drummer. And I was able to get her to get him to come over and talk to my drummer, kind of give him some lessons, talk about setting up the kit, because he got a brand new kit, and, you know, just really, you know, kind of give them some education there. Because, you know, like, as a lot of rock musicians, we're all self-taught. I'm one of the rare cases where I start out on trombone, so I have a lot of music experience, and I've studied theory and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, I got her to bring him over, and he set things up. And so as he's setting everything up, he's a huge Rush fan, and he brought his copy of Roll the Bones. And once he had the kit set up, he puts on Roll the Bones and plays along with it flawlessly. And just blasting on the stereo, playing along, and the drums that he just tuned sound amazing. It has that Neil Peart sound. And like that is burned into my brain. Like I mean, that was 90 something, you know, and I can remember it was my grandfather's basement because that's where we practiced. I can remember everything about that moment. Like, I can perfectly visualize everything in my brain still.
Wow. It's amazing how we remember certain things, but the reason why we walked into our office or why we went into the kitchen, just, I've, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, that's been five times today. I'm like, why am I?
Yeah. How many drummers does it take to screw in a light bulb?
Just one, because he can do it with his left hand. Is that the joke? No, that's the key.
Well, three. One to screw the light bulb in, and two to argue how Neil Peart would have done it better.
Brilliant!
I love it.
That is an old joke. Trust me. All day I've been waiting to bust that. puppy out. That is an old joke, man. Yeah. And I think it's even more apropos today. I know, Mark. You probably have like an absolutely amazing band moment. So I'm going to just kind of throw my lesser one here out now. I'm a big pro. After all these years, Mark, I'm still a big pro wrestling fan.
That's not surprising.
Yeah. I still love it. I remember back in the mid 80s, though, we didn't get much in the way of wrestling from Texas, the world class wrestling promotion. We never really got that on TV. I only read about it in the magazines. And all that. There was one wrestler in particular. Unfortunately, he's no longer with us. One Kerry Von Erich. And when I found that his nickname, he went by the modern day warrior, Kerry Von Erich. I thought to myself,
no way.
Okay, it's like, okay, that can't be a coincidence. That has to be, you know, a Rush reference.
Does he get sure enough? You?
I did a little more research, meaning bought some more wrestling magazines. Sure enough, it turns out, yeah. And he used Tom Sawyer as his ring entrance music.
That's awesome.
Way back. Amazing. Yeah. And it just, once again, it just shows the influence of what Rush is, because here is this dumb jock in Texas, you know, that's obviously a huge Rush fan and all that. So that always kind of really stuck out to me, both being a heavy music and a pro wrestling fan. You know, like that just kind of stuck out to me. So when I was compiling this, it's like, I gotta mention Kerry Von Erich, the modern day warrior, because I think it's gonna blow both those guys away. And I'm like, nah, I think mission accomplished. Like, I've intentionally waited for this to be the last thing that we kind of discussed, because, like, dude, like, your band moment, like, this is Mark Buell and Rush we're talking about here. Not to build you up too much, dude, but but this is the main event for me. So, like, what is your band moment?
Well, you know, this sounds like hyperbole, but my life has been a series of Rush moments.
That's right? Like,
you know, like, I was a 13-year-old kid and you know, playing Fly By Night and listening to the music and finding out, oh, it's inspired by The Lord of the Rings. So I go out and I buy The Lord of the Rings and I read it, right? So Rush, you know, they got me reading. They got me reading books. That's it. If it wasn't for Neil Peart, I probably would have never read anything in my life, right? Like, mm-hmm. And you know, my politics align with a lot of what Neil Peart has written. You know, like, seriously, my life is just this endless stream of Rush. It's influenced so much in my life. It would be hard to pick out a single moment.
That's so cool, though, man, because, you know, so many people will give you so much crap for the music. And I mean, yeah, even though Rush, like, I feel like they're a more respectable band, quote unquote. because of the musicianship and things, but people are still going to give you crap for rock and roll, and they don't give enough credit for inspiring the reading like that. You know, like Iron Maiden did a lot of that for me. There's a lot of stuff I looked up because of Iron Maiden songs. I'm like, what the heck's this about? And then you start picking up like the Rime and the Ancient Mariner, you know? So that's awesome, dude.
Hey, I remember in grade 9 in English class, the English teacher pulled out the Rime of the Ancient Mariner because she thought, oh man, this is something that will get them interested in poetry, right? Which is amazing.
And we were like, yeah, been there, done that.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Oh no. Like, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe what we need to do is to sit down and have maybe in September, to have all of us sit down and have a back to school episode where we talk about everything that went on in high school and all that.
I think statute of limitations has passed. I feel like
I think so.
I don't know, man, because we have a lot of stories about each other from our high school days.
And I don't know how much I want all my friends now to get wind of all of this, but it's definitely something to consider. Speaking of which, unfortunately, the ladies, our co-hostesses, Corrine and Sky, could not be here tonight, Mark, which is too bad because I really wanted you to talk to them and meet them as well. But another time, would you be so inclined to join us again on the show?
Absolutely. Just let me know when and I'll be there.
Okay, because when I'm at work, like I'm thinking more of this show than I am my own job. Like whatever. It's just my, what I refer to this show as the money job. I got more important things to think about. You know, so I'm always thinking about stuff, and you immediately came into mind. It's like, we got to do like a Dead Kennedys episode. We got to do a Minor Threat episode. And all that. As a matter of fact, I've got sipping my Lemmy's here in my Sex Pistols mug. We got to do a Sex Pistols episode. We got to, you know, which would be very much like our Rush episode. So thank you once again for taking time out of your busy schedule and introducing the world to the interwebs and all that. And like, we got to just sit down and talk a little more about, you know, the internet and how it shaped, you know, the music world, because it's just like there is so much there. You know, I remember, man, like I didn't even know what a computer was and I was friends with you first. You know, it just goes to show exactly how much has changed, you know, over the year. So yeah, if you would care to join us again, and we'll get the ladies involved as well, and we'll have a grand old time and do this again, because unfortunately the clock on the wall is telling us we should probably kind of wrap this up.
Can we squeeze in a couple more things? Because while we've got Mark here, like I've got a couple things I'm going to talk about.
Oh, please,
So one of them, and I find it hysterical that you're both listening to Rush and the Dead Kennedys because of a certain movie. Have you guys ever, either of you, seen the movie SLC Punk?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So do you know?
I have not.
Okay. So there's a scene in it, right? It's these two guys basically in like 1985, Matthew Lillard's in it, and they're walking through Salt Lake City as like hardcore punks. So as you can imagine, you know, very conservative Mormon Salt Lake City and these, you know, leather spiked hair punk rockers walking around. But at the very end of the movie, they show how they get into punk rock, and the one kid's going over to the other kid's house. And they've got a Rush tape going in the background. They're about to play Dungeons and Dragons. And, you know, it's you know, clearly the 70s. And the kid brings her, he's like, no, we're going to listen to something new. He's like, no, but this is Rush. Rush rocks. And he's like, you know, really getting like, oh, the riffs, the technical, you know, like all this stuff. And then they put in a punk rock tape and like everything changes. And, you know, I wanted to kind of get the take of you guys on it if you'd seen it.
I have. A long time ago when it first came out. Yeah. When you mentioned that, I'm like, oh my God, I haven't thought about that movie in so long. Matthew Lillard was amazing in that.
Oh yeah.
You know, this was pre-Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
You know, pre-Scream even, I believe, and all that. And it's just like, oh my God. Wow.
Someday, if we have more time, I'll make my argument that Rush is the punkest band ever.
I would love to discuss that. I think
I would play devil's advocate, but not wholeheartedly, because I don't know if I could argue that. You know, like for what, you know, for sure.
I would love to take that one. And then, so, and I got one question here for you, Mark. So another moment I had as a kid, and again, this is one of those moments that I can remember very vividly, because Geddy Lee and all the guys in Rush are very distinctive looking gentlemen. Back before I ever had cable and could get access to MTV back in the 80s, and like one of the broadcast stations late at night, like if you stayed up to like 1 a.m, they play music videos. And I would always do this on a weekend so I could stay up. And I remember, you know, I was at my grandparents' house, and I'm watching the TV, and there's this Rush video that's in this studio with this amazing snowy background. And I believe that same studio a few years back came up for sale because it needed renovation and somebody was trying to restore it. Do you know what studio that was? Do you know what I'm talking about, Mark?
Yeah. It's called Bay Studio. It was north of Montreal. It's since burnt down, in fact. Mm-hmm. But
wow, that sucks.
So, you know, they managed to salvage a door and some of the woodwork, and the guy who owned the studio gifted Neil Peart drumsticks made out of the wood from the room Tom Sawyer was recording.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh. That's wow. Awesome. What video was that?
Tom Sawyer.
That was mm-hmm. Tom Sawyer video?
Yeah.
I want to say that too. That sounds.
But the big Eraserhead poster in the background throughout it.
Okay,
wow. Just most recently, there's a fake news skit. I want to say maybe even the Hard Times website, hardtimes.net.
I love that website.
That's amazing. Apparently, according to hardtimes.net, Neil Peart's drum kit is being handed out and dispersed to every music school throughout Canada. Every school throughout the country is getting one piece of his drum kit.
And there's still 20 pieces left over, right?
There's still 20 pieces
left
over.
Dude, Neil's drum set is one of the most amazing drum sets. And he's just such an amazing drummer. I mean, all three of them are amazing musicians, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, mm-hmm. like what Neil did for drumming and for drummers, he really, really raised the bar, you know?
You know, the best quote I heard over the past week about Neil Peart, and I can't remember who said it, but it was, he was your drummer's favorite drummer.
Yeah.
Oh, for
yeah,
sure.
It's true.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Whenever, and it's not just because the man recently left us, but just over the decades, whenever someone talked about gifted musicians, you know, when musicianship, when songwriting came up, inevitably, especially talking about drummers, like his name came up. It was reflex. It was instinct. It was just like, okay, you dude in band X, name a great drummer, Neil Peart.
Yeah.
It was Reflex.
Yeah.
You know.
And then typically after him was Dave Lombardo.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. for sure. You know. Yeah. Well, let's definitely. Just this one conversation between the three of us just has my mind going. I'm now putting together like 10 episodes of this show. You know, just from this one conversation and all that.
We could absolutely keep this going if we wanted to. Because I'll tell you, like, I would love to hear Mark talk more about the base book. But again, we'll keep it short tonight. We'll do this another time. Because that'll give me time to research it. But then I found out, and I think it was Ian Christie, who does, you know, the different books, and he does Bloody Roots on Sirius XM.
Right.
I think he was doing one of the Neil Peart. Tributes on Sirius XM, and he talked about a book that Neil wrote. Is it called Ghost Rider? He did like 5,000 miles on a motorcycle or something like that. His longtime common law wife passed, and his daughter, is that it? Am I getting that right, Mark?
Yeah. His daughter died in a car accident, and then his wife died from cancer like 10 months later.
Yeah, and shortly after,
he jumped on a motorcycle and you know, rode from Toronto up to the Arctic and down through Central and South America for months on end, trying to, you know, get away from the grief, right? Mm-hmm, it's an excellent book. It's really touching. The other thing I found about it, I was talking to my wife earlier, it's an insight into a rock star's life who wasn't really a rock star, right? Like, he has a chapter about how he goes out to buy Nerf guns so that he can shoot the squirrels to keep them from getting into his bird feeders. Right? Not exactly the stereotypical rock star life, right?
But, yeah.
Right. I love stories like that even more than the sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Because with this show, like, one of the things that I do when we have like a musician on who have in like within the metal underground, when they've earned the legendary status, and they're legendary within the context of heavy music, but outside of that, like, no one cares who this guy is at the supermarket, or his kids' teachers don't care, like, he's the vocalist of Overkill or whatnot, you know, and all that. So when I have these legendary artists on, they're kind of like, yeah, I think that's just something like the press makes up, because, you know, like, my wife, yeah, whatever, just get your legendary ass outside and mow the lawn, you know.
Yeah. You know?
I kind of get that, not just with Peart, but all three members of Rush. Yeah, they're these legendary artists. They just don't strike me as, if you saw them in a supermarket, okay, they probably want to maintain a low profile. But if you recognize them and came up to them and talked to them, they would probably be more, like, for someone of their stature, they would probably be more down to earth than a lot of those artists that have attained that stature. And like you said that at the beginning of the show, Mark, when you said, like, Getty sat down 5 minutes. 5 minutes is a long time when you're doing signings. Because with what I do, like with Ninja Cat Productions, we put on the meet and greet at the shows all the time. And a lot of times it's bands that don't even have half of the stature Rush has. You know, people are getting their stuff signed. They sign something, shake a hand. Hi, how's it going? Next. For Mr. Lee to talk to, you know, for 5 minutes to a young fella like that, is that speaks volumes. And this is coming from a guy that sees it all the time and all that. So as much as the respect that I had for Rush, it has just multiplied just from that from that story alone. And I imagine, like, your son is just still over the moon, and that's just going to be a rock and roll story he passes to his grandkids someday.
Without a doubt, right? Like, you know, they all do strike me as just kind of regular guys, and always willing to help, you know. Quite amazing. Actually, I know you're a big baseball fan, speaking of the lives of rock stars outside of their music career.
Right.
You know, when you watch a Jays game, Geddy Lee has amazing season tickets at the Jays games.
No,
and
no.
Whenever you see, you know, they have the camera on the batter, you can see Geddy Lee in the back.
Really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
I'm looking out for that now, because there's like, when I come home from work and all that, and I just want to put my feet up, open up a beer, and just fucking watch the Jays. I get that. You know that I'm going to be looking for Geddy now. That doesn't surprise me. That doesn't surprise me at all. You know, that he would be out and about, you know, mingling with the peons. You know what I mean? You know, that's fantastic. I did not know that, and I probably should have. Oh, yeah. This is definitely one of those conversations that, you know, we're going to learn something new. Does anyone have anything else? No, that they want to share everything in the world of Rush.
I had my main questions answered, and I appreciate that.
One of the things that really, there are some bands from Canada, the Tragically Hip. Like, Aaron, do you know who the Tragically Hip are?
I know the name.
Okay, but apart from that, like, whatever, right?
Yeah, I don't know if I could identify a song at all, but I'm like that about a lot of pop music.
Okay. Well, this band is the fucking Rolling Stones in Canada. Okay, they are huge. Okay, outside of the U.S., they could not get arrested. I've heard stories of the Tragically Hip trying to tour the U.S., to 20 people.
Yeah.
You know, but they'll sell out, you know, our big hockey rink in record time. Now, unfortunately, the vocalist has passed away. There is no more Tragically Hip. There is a lot of bands in Canada: Harlequin, The Headpins, Honeymoon Suite, The Tragically Hip, and these are just bands over the years, okay? Couldn't get arrested outside of Canada. Rush, okay, was always huge in the U.S.
Yeah,
like when we discovered them, Mark, like they were selling out arenas like in the U.S. and all that, and I thought, like, this is fucked up, in a good way, you know, because it's just like Canada just couldn't be somewhat insulated from the U.S. sometimes. But for a band like Rush, like, to be over so big in the U.S., that I was just, it's amazing. It's amazing. Like, have you noticed that? Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Sorry. There's no doubt. There's quite a few bands. I'm trying to think of them, but nothing's coming to the top of my head that are a little more recent. But there is this sort of cultural dividing line between Canada and the U.S. that shows its head from time to time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like Loverboy. You know, like,
yeah.
big in Canada, Loverboy, Aldo Nova. Like, do these names mean anything to you, Aaron?
Well, I'm loving every minute of it, Snowy.
Loverboy
definitely means something. And Aldo Nova, I'm drawing a blank on the songs, but I've actually seen Aldo Nova live, and I know that I like their songs. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, but I couldn't tell you a single song name, though. But again, that's me in pop music. Like, I really struggle with a lot of pop music. You know, if If it doesn't completely bite me, then I don't know. But yeah, man, like loving every minute of it. I think we actually did that in my eighth grade rock band at school.
Oh, wow. Holy shit. And you were in Pittsburgh at the time,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Okay. Fair enough. Fair enough. Well, extra cool points to Aaron. Extra helping of maple syrup to Aaron for his knowledge of Loverboy.
I know. I want to come to Canada just for weed and maple syrup now. You know.
Exactly.
That's what I wanted to ask. Okay. And okay. This is going to sound like a completely like jerk question, but I really don't mean it like this. So I wanted to ask if there's any enhanced ways to listen to Rush that opens you up to the band more or enhances the experience. So what I'm getting at here is a lot of people have said, because I'm not a Grateful Dead fan either, and a lot of people have said that to enjoy the Grateful Dead, to really get it, you got to listen to them on acid, which I will never ever do in my life.
No,
whole other story for another episode. We'll talk about why. But people say, like, if you listen to the Grateful Dead on acid, then when you listen to them, you know, sober, then you totally, you get it. Like, you get it once you hear them on acid. Like, is there anything with Rush like that? Because, like, I've listened to some of the stuff again. I'm like, would this be more fun if you were high? You know, like, but so do you guys feel that way or no?
Not at all. Okay. No. The best way to listen to Rush: headphones, close your eyes, or just stare at a blank wall. Soak it all in. Like, you don't need all of that. And it's not party music. You know what I mean? Like,
it's really not.
There is some music in some bands, you know, like, let's get together with the boys and grab a keg of beer and throw on some tunes. Well, let's throw on Rush. No. Like, there is probably some, you know, like, if you're on your way home from a party or whatever, and Tom Sawyer or Limelight or something comes on the radio, you're going to rock along and all that.
Yeah.
You're not kicking up the party a notch by slapping on, you know, Cressa Kings, or, you know, like, you're not doing that. It's just not, you know, Rush is not that band.
See, you all made right, a I, great point.
No, I see.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, no, I was going to say, I like to pair a fine wine with each album. And I'm just kidding.
I was going to say, for real, tell me what wines. I'll try this.
No, actually, no.
I'm trying to get into wine, so you've got my attention.
Yeah, no, it's not Lemmy music, but it might be, you know, fine wine. If when you're just vegging at home with your feet up with your significant other, and hopefully she has amazing taste in music as well, Rush would be the band, like, to crack open a bottle of fine wine and kick back and enjoy the experience together.
I do know that Neil Peart was quite the lover of Macallan whiskey, so, you know, a bottle of Macallan.
Yes, and Ronnie James Dio, you know, rest in power, sir. He was a pub guy. He wasn't a party guy. He didn't do a lot of stupid drugs and all that. What he liked to do is go to pubs and just drink draft beer and hang out and talk to friends and all that. And, you know, I've heard enough sex, drugs, and rock and roll stories over the years. When it comes to talking to individuals like that, I don't want to hang out with Tommy Lee. I want to hang out with Ronnie James Dio. I want to hang out with Geddy Lee and just sit and talk about, you know, just life and music and all that. Yeah. Anything, whatever he wants to talk about. For sure. Because yeah, all of that excess is fun. But when you're a musical connoisseur, like I know the three of us are, like, what's more important on your palate? You know, it's definitely stuff like that.
Well, I'll say, discussion has convinced me that this record store day, I need to pick up some Rush album on vinyl. And then crack a bottle of wine and stare at the wall or close my eyes and put it on the turntable here and give it a listen side by side.
Oh, Rush is definitely vinyl music.
Yeah, I think that that's going to be a goal this year. Yeah.
Yeah, 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 for sure, for sure. Record Store Day is a thing with you, Mark?
Yeah, I hit it every year. I hit it.
Yes. Absolutely. Oh, we got to have you on for that episode.
Right on. For sure, for sure.
And you know what? I've still got all of my my Rush albums on vinyl.
Rock on,
I knew
man.
You did. I knew you did. So,
I remember when I was like 17, I owed Skid like $20 and I didn't have it on me. So I gave him my triple fold-out of All the World's a Stage and I think another Rush picture disc. And I regret doing that.
You know, I don't know where Skid is. I've called him a couple times. Like, dude, I'm saying, dude, get a hold of me, you know, whatever and all that. And he just... I don't know. I don't know. But he's definitely a character on this show. And I want you to continue to be a character and a force on this show as well, my friend. I'm really stoked, really excited that you started my 2020 off, you know, by doing this, starting it off with a bang. Thank you so much. Does anyone else have anything else they would like to contribute? In the world of Rush?
No, I feel like I've gotten it all out. This has been a blast, man. Like, Mark, again, thanks for coming to the show. It was nice to meet you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this has been an absolute blast.
Right on,
thank
right
you so
on.
So much for having me here.
No problem, no problem. And I knew you two, like, you guys are friends for life now. Like, I just have this feeling. Aaron, how can people get a hold of us?
Well, they can use the internet.
Of course.
I've heard of it.
I couldn't resist. I couldn't resist. Because, you know, again, going back to the fact that Snowy feels that if somebody works on a computer, we all have the same jobs. But, yeah. So, head to...
Probably a bunch of desk jockeys.
Well, yeah, and it's tough to get moving some days. So, head to radioactivemetal.org. You can check out all of our episodes, past, present, and soon to be future. You still got to wait for it, but it will be in the future. And you get everything there. Check us out, facebook.com/radioactivemetal. Or is it just Rad Metal? It's one of the two. Radmetal666 on Twitter and Instagram. You can go to shiningwizardsnetwork.com to check us out, as well as several other wrestling podcasts that are out there. And, of course, you can hear us first every Thursday night, purerockradio.net. Check us out there.
Right on, right on. And I know Mark remembers. Remember Metal Forces magazine?
Oh, totally. I haven't thought of that in like decades.
Okay. Remember in the back of Metal Forces magazine, there was the Pen Bangers section?
Yeah, yeah.
Remember, like how we used to do it back then during the old tape trading days. We used to communicate each with each other through letters. Every once in a while, what I like to do is for our listeners, just as a throwback to the old Pen Banger days, to the old days of the Pen Pal section in Metal Maniacs magazine and all that. I like to throw it out to the listeners to say, hey. Contact your cool Uncle Snowy through Facebook and all that good stuff. Get a hold of me, and I want to talk to our listeners through the old snail mail, through the old Pen Bangers section. And it's the same thing with bands. You want to be on an indie spotlight? All of your digital, you know, send us all your digital and all that. That's great. But I would definitely give preference to a band, you know, that sent me, you know, your latest release on a cassette, just a blank cassette, just like we did during the old fanzine days back in the 80s, which I know Mark remembers all of those as well. So get a hold of us on Facebook. I would like to talk to everyone through the old fashioned way. Once again, Mark, thank you so much. For joining us once again. Unfortunately, the ladies were not able to join us. I'm sure they give, you know, they say hello and they look forward to speaking to you next time, and I'm sure if you don't mind, you'll want to join us once again. In the meantime, and in between time, that's it. This has been a show of fans. Come on, guys, give me props for that.
That was pretty good. Because I was thinking of all kinds of titles. I'm like, oh, show of fans, that's good.
Yeah.
Nicely done.
Right on. Episode of Radioactive Metal. I'm Snowy White.
This is Aaron.
And you are?
Mark Fuel.
Thank you once again, my friend. Sign off.
There are only three good things you need in life. Sex, beer, and pure rock.
If you're not tuned in to the Shining Wizards, listen to what some of our fans have to say about the show.
Hey guys, it's the Stallion, and when I'm contemplating suicide, I throw on the Shining Wizards because nothing makes me feel better than knowing I'm not one of these four grown adults, virgin fucking marks, discussing a fake wrestling product.
Tune in live every Tuesday night, 7 p.m. East, rantemradio.com. It's the Shining Wizards, where it's wrestling talk and talk about wrestling.